The day before something is truly a breakthrough. It's a crazy idea. Peter Diamandis once said this in his book, Bold. Now he's taking that concept into the classroom and beyond. This week on Techonomics, guest host Julian Guthrie, the best-selling author of How to Make a Spaceship, talks with the XPRIZE founder about reforming education and how Peter became the subject of Julian's book.
I'm Julian Guthrie. I'm filling in for Jason Middleton, who is on vacation. Let's get right into our conversation with Peter Diamandis. We are very excited to have Peter Diamandis joining us. Peter is the chairman of the XPRIZE Foundation. He's the co-founder of Human Longevity, Inc., which is a biotech company aimed at extending your healthy lifespan. He's the co-founder of Planetary Resources, which is a Seattle-based company building spacecraft to mine asteroids. And he is the co-founder of Singularity University, an entrepreneurial center in Silicon Valley. He is also the author of two best-selling books, Abundance and Bold. And he happens to be the main character of another great book, How to Make a Spaceship, written by yours truly, published recently by Random House. I spent a year plus interviewing Peter Diamandis for my book, and there are great stories in the book. But today I want to focus on another subject that Peter is really passionate about. Peter is kind of this guy who goes into these different industries and fields, and he's a great disruptor. He likes to say, I think of problems as gold mines. So Peter, welcome. Let's start with your ideas about disrupting education. You have boys. Was this prompted by, you know, your young boys and thinking about education?
It was. And I have two boys that are turning six right now. They're fraternal twins. And, you know, I'm going through the process of getting them into kindergarten. All of a sudden, I find that here in Los Angeles, the price of kindergarten is equivalent to most universities. And you're crazy. You're kidding me. I have to write applications and I've got to compete and the chances that are getting in are slim. And that just sent me whirling down this process of, oh my God, how much has it changed since I was a child? We found one school we wanted to go to in LA. And if we didn't get into that particular school, my normal reaction to it is, well, then I'll just start it myself. And I started thinking about what would be a elementary school experience I'd want to create. And I ended up writing a white paper, and people can actually get that white paper at my website, diamandis.com. And I realized that the traditional educational system we have today is really mismatched for the world ahead. The educational, you know, elementary school, junior high school program that you and I went through was built for a world that was much more an industrial world where you as the students would sit in your seats, the bell would ring, and you'd move to your next station. You'd learn something, the bell would ring, you'd move to your next station, you'd learn something. And most schools were teaching content to enable you to pass a standardized test. And the test drove everything rather than what's actually useful for children to learn today. And I got, the more I thought about it, the more pissed off I got that this was just absolutely wrong. And so I started thinking about what kids should learn versus what they do learn. And it turns out to be somewhat quite different.
Well, there was this great one, many great quotes in that. But one was, learning needs to be less like memorization and more like Angry Birds. So How do you get kids addicted to learning as they are to gaming?
The reality is most of our education growing up was memorization, of the math table, memorization of processes. You know, I like to joke and say, when's the last time you did polynomial factorization, you know, where you were the stuff that you learned in seventh and eighth grade in algebra, all great, but is it more important than teaching a kid to really be a great storyteller, to have a passion idea that they learn how to pitch in a really great way, or to be an entrepreneur, to have an idea and to pursue that idea, to be a great debater, to be able to come up with the rational reasons of why your idea is a good idea. I think these are much more useful skills in a world with Google where memorizing facts is less important, especially in the world that's coming our way where you're going to, all of us will have an AI software shell that's giving us the answers we need. And one of my fundamental realizations was actually today it's not the answers that are more important. It's the questions that are more important. The questions kids learn how to ask, their comfort with asking questions. is going to be critically the differentiator for success in the future.
And you make the point of also, you know, which you touched on, of storytelling and how important it is to convey your idea.
When I think about what skills, I mean, today I've started 17 companies. I'm working on my 18th and 19th company. I love the process of being an entrepreneur and creating companies to solve problems. You know, I went to arguably some of the top universities in the world, MIT as an undergrad and Harvard for medical school. And, you know, when I think about what I learned throughout my educational process of 27, 28 years and what I actually use today, I use very little of what I learned in school. And I learned mostly what I ended up having to learn to be an entrepreneur. So I've learned how to, you know, passionately or compassionately pitch an idea to get people to give me critical feedback or to be able to buy in and support my idea. I've learned how to bring teams together and how to raise capital or how to create products or services. And in an age of instant knowledge where you can ask Google or Alexa anything and have the answer instantly, what you do with that answer is more important.
You know, one of the things that I most respect about you is your passion, and not only that, but your perseverance. So tell about the story that I got to write about you and how you found your passion and what you did with that when it comes to the founding of the XPRIZE and Spaceship One and making history and galvanizing really an industry.
And I appreciate it. And I'm so proud of the book that you wrote. And for everyone listening, you know, I first met Julian when she was at the San Francisco Chronicle, and she wrote a wonderful cover story on me, and she gained my trust. And I gave to you, Julian, all of my, you know, 30 years of journals and audio recordings, and just said, here's me, go at it. And you wrote a book that tells the details and the hardships and the stories and this craziness. So I grew up, as you begin the story, growing up in New York. Parents both immigrated from Greece, and I was expected to be a physician. My dad was a doctor. My mom ran his office, could have been a doctor. But growing up, Star Trek and Apollo captured my heart, and I wanted to be an astronaut, you know, terribly. And I ended up finishing medical school to make my parents happy. And I remember photographing the diploma and sending them a copy and said, here it is, put it up on the wall. I'm going to go follow my dreams. And I, you know, went to MIT and did an aerospace engineering degree, then started space company after space company. My first group was called SED, Students Exploration and Development of Space, which is still, you know, around the world. Jeff Bezos was the president of the Princeton chapter. And from there, I started a university called International Space University. And you continue in the book to tell the story of the XPRIZE. So when I was at MIT and Harvard doing my degrees, I learned that my chances of becoming an astronaut were probably 1 in 1,000. There were so many applicants, so many qualified people, so many everything that it was just unlikely I'd actually get a chance to become an astronaut. And then I learned that if you became an astronaut, you typically would get 1 or 2 flights during your career. And that just did not jive with my vision of being an astronaut. I'd want to, you know, fly every weekend. Like if you're a scuba diver or a mountain climber, you can do whatever you want. And then I learned that, you know, half the astronauts had actually never flown. And so I set out to do it privately.
When it didn't exist. This is a period when commercial
exist.
Space
yeah.
was non-existent, right?
Yeah, back then there was no way you could go, no ticket you could buy. Everyone knew that space flight was just for governments. And a dear friend, Greg Marinac, gave me a copy of Charles Lindbergh's book called The Spirit of St. Louis. And I learned in that book that in 1927, Lindbergh made the flight from New York to Paris to win a $25,000 prize. And that $25,000 prize attracted 9 teams who spent $400,000 to win the prize. And the guy, Raymond Ortega, who put up the prize money, didn't back any of the losers. In fact, 3 of the 9 teams lost their lives making the attempt. And he only backed Lindbergh, who was arguably the least qualified to make the flight. So I said, that's it. I'm going to create a prize for private space flight that would create the launch vehicles, the spaceships that would carry me and my friends into space. And in May of 1996, under the arch in St. Louis, long story from reading the Lindbergh book to getting to that stage on St. Louis, and you tell that story beautifully in How to Make a Spaceship, I announced this $10 million prize, And as you know, Julian, without the $10 million in
place.
I
love that. I always tell people that, and they're just like, what? He announces a $10 million prize without the $10 million. But okay, go ahead.
But I was so confident that would be, you know, who would not want to put their name on the prize? Because you pay only after someone makes the flight. But I overjudged my confidence. And again, as you tell beautifully, you know, pitching Fred Smith at FedEx and the heads of the car companies and the all the banks and insurance companies. Long story short, 150 no's later, I meet the Ansari family, the Anousheh Hamid, Amir Ansari, who backed the prize purse. This is now 2001. And then 3 years later, Burt Rutan, backed by Paul Allen, builds Spaceship One, flies Spaceship One twice, 200 kilometers. Mike Melville as the pilot in the first flight, Brian Binney as a pilot in the second flight, and they win the $10 million. And then Richard Branson comes along and buys the winning technology to create Virgin Galactic and now Spaceship Two.
We were talking with Peter Diamandis. When we come back, we'll talk with Peter more about space, Elon Musk, and Jeff Bezos. I'm Julian Guthrie, filling in for Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics.